I will first call the case. The second case for oral argument today is number A21-1658, Scott Michael Gold versus Chelsea Dodge Frawley. Counsel for appellant has filed the principal brief of the appellant. Respondent did not file a brief. This court previously issued an order stating that pursuant to Rule 142, the matter would be submitted based upon the appellant's brief and the appellant's oral argument, and then the case will be decided according to law. So we will have a 15-minute argument from counsel for appellant, and then the matter will be submitted. So counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and your client and then begin.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. May it please the court, Luke Haskamp on behalf of appellant Chelsea Frawley, who is in court this morning. We really appreciate the time. Your Honors, I think this is a good example of why we need appellate courts. This was a straightforward child custody dispute where the district court substantially reduced Ms. Frawley's parenting time, changed the 50-50 split she had for her children over the summer, and reduced it to just 4 days a month, every other weekend, just over 10% of the summer month. The court did it without...
Do we look at and we determine whether or not it was a substantial amount of parenting time change? Do we look at the year, or do we just look at the period? I mean, you're focusing on the summer.
Correct.
But when we talk about the proportion of the change in terms of proportion, why wouldn't we look at the year?
I think you would, Your Honor, but I think it's still important to, and this goes more to the custody factor than the best interest standard. So we raised a number of issues in our brief. The first one is whether the court applied the correct legal standard simply in modifying any aspect of the parenting order. And that analyzes whether it's in the best interest of the child and the 12 factors enumerated by the statute. The second and third issues we raised in our brief go to whether the change constituted a de facto change in custody. And for that, you do consider whether any aspect of the Ms. Frawley's control over the children's daily routine is disrupted by this modification. And the summer months, it's a significant portion of time. That's 25% of the year. And that's, she went from having control over that important aspect of children's time at least 50% of the time to...
Again, just in the summer, though, not overall. I guess I'm trying to understand this distinction between the parenting time modification and a custody modification. And if it's just the amount of time, it seems like you have if all you have is the amount of time, as opposed to what activities. And the district court in this case says we're not talking about the activities. All those things stay. Nothing changes in that regard. Nothing's been requested to change in regard to the activities. So I'm trying to understand what is the legal standard that would help us to decide whether it's in one category or the other.
Well, I think we would, Ms. Frawley would win before we would even get to that issue. I think we see a modification of the parenting schedule where the court just failed to apply the correct standard. It's unclear it's even applying any standard. It's certainly not referencing the 12 factors enumerated by statute. And so and any time there's a modification to a parenting order, regardless of what it is, the court has to apply that standard, has to consider those factors.
The best interest factors.
Yes, the best interest factors, has to make detailed findings on those factors.
Right, but if you're right about that, and we were to assume for the sake of argument that we think you're right about that, and the district court should have to address those things, we'd still have to inform the district court, if we're going to remand for that purpose, for the proper findings, whether the district court was correct in treating it as a modification of parenting time versus a modification of custody.
Correct. And it certainly is a modification of parenting time. But when you take away the children for the summer, when it goes from a 50-50 split, where Ms. Frawley has been the sole primary caregiver for these children the whole life, she's been responsible for custody. I think the Supreme Court's decision, the In Re MJH case, looks at what amounts to substantial. And summer months are important for children. And what we had
right,
here.
But keeping in mind the MJH case is pretty clear. Merely increasing parenting time to 50% without more would not modify the award of sole custody. So in that case, it was also a similar circumstance, substantial amount of time. And the court there, and the court says, no, that doesn't get you to custody. You need something more.
And what you need is, I think it need to show that Ms. Frawley loses the ability to be responsible for the daily routine of the children. And that is certainly
But why wouldn't that be the same as MJH? I mean, if the other parent is substantially increasing, I shouldn't say, is significantly increasing parenting time, then that, by just the circumstance of life, would mean that is that parent versus the other one is more involved in those activities. But in this case, the court is clear. The district court seemed clear in saying, we're not talking about the activities. We're not talking about the decisions about school or those other things. These things are unchanged. We're only talking about parenting time.
Correct. And I think that highlights the district court's error. It needs to consider those factors. That is important. That for some reason, the district court was solely focused on this idea that Ms. Frawley had moved.
What is an MJH that would say that the district court was wrong in its treatment?
Well, so in MJH, the Supreme Court does conclude that the modification was substantial enough to constitute a change of custody, which requires the endangerment standard be applied. And certainly no endangerment standard is met here. There's no findings of endangerment. There's no evidentiary hearing even held. The other side didn't even make that argument. And so in MJH, the court found it was substantial. It affected half of all school days. What it came down to is this idea that it changes the daily care and control of the children. And that's what Ms. Frawley loses over the summer months.
Mr. Haskamp, a follow-up what Judge Ross asked you. You seem to only focus on the summer. So I have a two-part question. Are you conceding the rest of the year there was no substantial change at all, so you're only looking at the summer? Am I right about that premise in your argument?
I think that's correct. I think the summer months are the ones that are so substantial time was tweaked during the school year.
Is there any law that you can cite to us that would bifurcate in that way, and that portion of the year is so significant such that it becomes a de facto custody modification, rather than what, as Judge Ross pointed out, my experience is you look at 12 months, look at the date, you look at the percentages, that sort of an analysis.
I don't know if I have a specific example. I think the MJH case is maybe as close as we get with that, Your Honor. It's a good question. But what that standard is whether it changes the daily care and control of the children. And I think that suggests for any portion of the year.
Well, but okay, any portion. What about a single day, a Saturday? I mean, if somebody has weekends for that one day, it's 100% change. But if you look at it on a monthly basis, it might be different, but, you know, quarterly,
correct,
annually. I mean, I share my colleagues' concerns. I think we're thinking of kind of the same thing. And I'm wondering if there's any case law about whether a seasonal or a temporary, or yeah, maybe seasonal is a better way to describe it, change, which is maybe substantial in and of itself, but if it's considered alongside the the opposite season or the rest of the year. If it's considered on an annual basis, then it might not be substantial. I mean, is there any case law that either defines that or illustrates how a court should do that, make that determination, whether it's substantial change or not?
Your Honor, I don't have any specific case law on that point.
Maybe that's our fault, not yours. But, I'm kind of struggling for guidance on how to determine that. And I think too, if I may, in looking at your brief and like the table of contents, I think your first issue has to do with the absence of findings on the best interest factors. Your second argument in part two has to do with whether or not it was a substantial change to be a de facto change in custody. I think we're thinking about them in reverse order. I mean, I think we're first addressing, was it a substantial change? And it's a little bit of branch point logic from there. Either then we look at, was there a finding of endangerment, if that's required, or if not, if it's not a substantial change in custody, then we're looking to the...
Correct. But I think... either way, there's an error, an abuse of discretion, and I think we don't need to get to the change of custody.
But if we're going to, let's say if we agree with you that there was an error that needs to be reversed and remanded to the district court for additional work, where would the district court start? I mean, what should we tell the district court to do exactly, and should we determine whether or not it was a substantial change and then send it back for specific findings on one or the other, or should we ask the district court to do that on remand?
Right. Well, I think the court certainly could find that this change was so substantial, taking the children away for the summer, taking them away, denying Ms. Frawley the daily care and control of the children for the summer, as a legal matter, as a matter of law, constitutes a de facto change of custody. And if you make that conclusion, it's clear that the standard wasn't met. It wasn't even addressed. The other side doesn't make the argument.
And are you asking us to do that?
Yes. Okay. Yes, Your Honor. But I think that isn't necessary for Ms. Frawley to get her children back or to return to the parenting time we had.
If you're asking us to do that, we would have to do it under some legal standard. We'd have to say, as a matter of law, and under this standard, this is necessarily a substantial amount of court-ordered parenting time change.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what exactly is the legal standard that you would have us to remove from? At what point is it no longer a discretionary call, the idea of substantiality?
It's an excellent question. I would go back to the MJH case, which, under the totality of circumstances, asks whether the change is so substantial to amount to deny the parent who has had daily care and control of the children the responsibility for doing that. And I think I agree. One day isn't enough. A weekend isn't enough. Even a week isn't necessarily enough. Ms. Frawley can still manage activities, doctor's appointments, dentist appointments, thing like that, even if they're continuing that 50-50 split. But it's when they're taken out of their community, the community that they've lived for the entire year, that it becomes substantial enough to be disruptive to the children's lives and to deny her the daily care and control.
And just so I'm clear, mother now lives in Minnetonka and father lives in Prescott?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, Your Honor. And that's a notable, when we go back to the district court's failure on the best interest standard and its failure to make detailed findings of fact, you won't find those findings in there, even these basic ones about the commute, which was the only thing that mattered to the district court. Even then, it's not making findings on what the commute literally is, as opposed to how it's, or let alone how it affects the children's best interest at all, which just highlights the district court's legal errors here. It's abuse of discretion. It makes one finding of fact about the commute. It says that the parents' parties used to live 20 minutes apart, which is wrong. That is, both party submissions contradicted that. They had lived 30 minutes apart.
Mr. Haskamp, when you mentioned submissions, and this goes again to the perhaps part of our thought process if we were to remand in any, under any fashion, the parties expected the court to make its decision on submissions without an evidentiary hearing.
That's correct.
Okay. And so you're not asking us to instruct a judge to hold an evidentiary hearing, at least as to regard to the first issue. Arguably, I suppose it could be with regard to an endangerment. That's a different issue, perhaps. So the point being is if on the first issue, and that's why you kept saying you don't have to get to that, if we find the court erred in making best interest findings, it could be remanded for the court to consider the submissions already received and simply make its best interest.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that also highlights the court's error. The affidavit that Ms. Frawley submitted in support of her request in opposition, it was detailed. And it literally goes through each of the 12 factors. It had a paragraph or multiple paragraphs on each factor. It should have been very easy for the court to make that decision. It has the evidence it needs. I'm sorry, my time is up. Just
feel free to fully answer the question.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yes, the court has the information it needs. What we need the court to do is to consider perhaps the biggest error the court made is not just focusing on this commute, but what does this new proposal mean for the children, right? What is it if I take the kids out of the community that they lived in, the school district where they've been, what does it mean for the relationships they've built with friends, with classmates, with her partner's children, Ms. Raleigh's partner's children? That analysis isn't there, but there should be enough in the party submissions for the court to get this right.
Thank your time has expired. Thank you for your arguments, Mr. Haskamp. The case is submitted. The court will issue its written decision within 90 days.
Thank you very much.